just before I ask you to open our discussion on what would be like for 2025, I think I probably should have put this up earlier for sort of discussion, but a few prompts. We did a pre-meeting survey. This just shows some of the recurring issues that we might like to think about. Use of plain English documents for customers, yes, please. Trusts, response times. But equally, there's lots of things that have been done well. So if we are ready, Rachel, can I ask you to kick us off on the subject of what would we like for 2025?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, obviously, I'm not a medical professional with these things that are on my list. But I think one of the main ones for me is maybe a more up-to-date, sensible view when it comes to BMI. For one, I'm not talking kind of the end of the scale where people have got a really high BMI or really low BMI, but I feel with that middle ground, it is a bit old school now. You know, the average woman in their 30s has got a BMI of over 27, which is pushing towards the obese end. I fall into that category. I wouldn't class myself as obese. So I just think it is a bit dated. It is a bit old school. I understand, you know, there were additional health issues when people have got really low BMIs, really high BMIs, people who are bodybuilders, for example, there's problems there and things like that. But I just think it could do with a bit of an overview from the insurers in that area. And then secondly, my other one, which I think I'm finding quite common at the moment, was around breast cancer exclusions on critical illness policies. I think more providers should look at offering the cover with a rating. So I know some providers do that, some don't. I think a lot of clients would be happy to pay a little bit more for their cover if they know that they were going to have cancer included on their cover. It doesn't mean that they're going to get it if, you know, that their mum's had it, for example. You know, 90% of cancers aren't necessarily hereditary. They happen by chance. And I suppose, you know, it is only women as well that get this breast cancer exclusion from what I've seen. And men can get breast cancer as well. And obviously they don't have the same kind of problems there with the exclusion. So I just think really it'd be good if more providers offered the option to have the cover and have that increased premium on their critical illness to include breast cancer when there is a family history there of it. Oh, I can't hear you, Ian.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, I had some.
It's okay.
Yeah. Typical example of modern life. I had somebody in the middle of you talking actually came and delivered something. So I muted myself while I went off. Yeah, really interesting one about the BMI. And is there a need? I'm not sure necessarily we want to go to the US type of approach where there are prime, super prime, ultra prime, or those aren't the exact terms they use, but they have so many different variations and it's virtually impossible to get life cover without what they call wet tests, bloods and the like. So I mean, yeah, that's a really interesting one. I suppose it's timely. Blueberry Life got their FCA authorization yesterday. Are we going to see more specialist providers coming into the market this year? Do we think that will be a good thing to see? Certainly a, you know, good point on there. Michelle Lawson, you've come in and said you'd like to see a rating rather than an exclusion. Do you want to expand on that? And then I'm going to invite, does anybody from the insurer side want to share a view on that? It's only fair to give the insurers the opportunity to respond. We don't have any reinsurers on this call. It's a shame they don't get involved.
No, I actually think it would be better. I think we, rather than us wasting so much time as brokers, intermediaries, advisors, however we call ourselves, putting these applications in, it would be really nice to know that actually you're going to get the policy. So it doesn't matter what you do when you're submitting it. If you're submitting it with an insurer, that regardless of the fact whether somebody's got a health issue, it doesn't necessarily mean that they should be deemed completely uninsurable, because, you know, they're potentially putting people off from taking that policy in the first place. And arguably, really, all they're trying to do in some ways is creating a dead cert policy, aren't they? That they're in. And yes, OK, you know, there might be an element of that you're paying out on a dead cert, that it's going to pay out if you've got that illness. But I just wonder, from a stats perspective, if there has been any policies that have been put live with those exclusions or with those ratings on, how many people have actually gone on to claim on that specific illness that they've actually had the exclusion on, or whether the claim has actually been on something that's unrelated?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Does it make the case for more pre-underwriting services, more services that, you know, like Underwrite Me, that enable people to go through far more of the process? There are other things in that area that might be coming along next year, but I'm not allowed to talk to right now, unless any of the people on behalf of those organisations who might be bringing those things to market next year want to stick their hands up and I'll bring them into the call, but I can't say. So can I come back to Michael Chapman? Michael, you gave us some great thoughts earlier about 2024. Looking at 2025, what would you like to see?
Yeah, thanks, Ian. I think this session is mainly going to be underwriting, because I've got similar gripes. If anything, my wish is for life insurance to change. I think, you know, we're sat here and we're talking about exclusions, and, you know, offering a rating instead of exclusions, but that's applicable to both IP and KIC and not life. And I struggle, and I hope some of the providers can jump on and help me understand, but I really struggle to understand why insurance companies exclude suicide, decline life cover for serious mental health conditions, when they already have an exclusion for suicide in the first 12 months on pretty much every policy, and some in the last 12-18 months. I want, and my wish is to bring in mental health friendly life insurance policies. So that is to offer clients who would be a decline the option to have an exclusion for suicide in life insurance. I think one that'll improve the negative connotations that insurance has. I think it's quite a brave thing for clients to go through a medical application, especially when they've suffered with a suicide attempt, suicidal thoughts. And it's quite hard to disclose everything. Hello. and to have every intention to go for the right product. Like I said, all of our clients are mortgage clients. So, you know, they have a need for protection. To then, after all that, all the bravery and all the intense details that they have to give, to then be declined for something that they already think is excluded on insurance policies. You ask most clients think suicide is already excluded. So I don't understand why life insurance doesn't have the ability for exclusions. I know we open up a can of worms if we say, oh, all loads of conditions can be excluded. I am pushing for mental health to be offered an exclusion on life insurance, as I think that applies to a lot of the, you know, the UK. And a couple of stats I took from the Mind charity website: 1 in 4 people experience a mental health problem of some kind each year in England, and 1 in 6 people report experiencing a common mental health problem like anxiety and depression in any given week in England. I think that those stats are just going to keep on going up with, you know, the more awareness of the conditions. Yeah, that's it for me. It's to push for that change in the life insurance world, because we have so many good things happening with all the other products. I feel like life insurance is just being left, and there's definitely room for improvement.
I think you make some very valuable points, and people have mentioned in the chat one or two insurers that are doing some good things, which is great. I mean, just to add a personal view onto that one, I think we need to start disclosure is such a crucial issue, yet, do we need to start as an industry being a little bit more exclusive? And I'll give you an example that I've seen in stark contrast. Is approach to marijuana use. Now, how many people that had been through university didn't ever touch anything at any time, but probably wouldn't disclose that? And yet it's, that's then a non-disclosure. But where it gets really interesting is when you go to the States. And I was in a conference a couple of years ago where there was a reinsurer, and this individual, and obviously you've got over half the states now where marijuana is used is legal. This reinsurer was clearly pro marijuana use and talking in a very different way. My point is this, do we have a public view on that? And should we be trying to when we talk to people about the importance of disclosure and that it's absolutely essential that we are transparent, should we be clearer ourselves as an industry as to what would or wouldn't impact an application? Okay, moving on. Actually, one thing I'd like to flag something, which I think is an important lesson for us to learn as an industry, which is that I believe we need to take a different approach to including our friends from the wealth community. As I mentioned at the top of the call, we've now been running a protection forum for members of the Consumer Duty Alliance, who are predominantly wealth advisors, and they're a self-selecting community that are coming on to these forums because they want to learn to sell more protection. They want to engage more with protection. But when you look at the information, we polled, we had 112 advisors on a call who responded. There were more on the call, but 112 responded. And we asked them what would make them more inclined to make protection part of their proposition. 57% effectively said they don't see the need for protection. Now, personally, I don't think we're ever going to address the protection gap as well as we could until such time as we convince those people. And the problem here is if those advisors don't believe there is a need, as the protection industry has been telling them that they are wrong year in, year out, and saying, you must do it. Einstein's definition of insanity was doing the same thing again and again and again. That's not working. So we need to change our approach. We went further with them. We asked them what the biggest blocker was when it came to engaging with protection. The voting was equal, but 43% for each. One was the lack of the necessary training or tools to help us give protection advice. And the second one was the complexity of protection. To me, those are both a variation on a theme and really do come back to the need for more training. And as a community, the protection industry post-consumer duty has rather convinced itself that it's not a problem anymore because wealth advisors can just refer it. Well, I'm sorry, that's not going to work. If you look at 92% of wealth advisors do not want to refer protection business to someone else. Please don't shoot the messenger. But when asked, only 8% saw the solution as sharing it to someone else. But to go back to the original point, if 57% of them don't see the need, they don't need to refer it because they're not recognizing the avoidable harm. So my little pitch is, my little wish for next year is, can we please learn to educate the wealth community differently? And Protection Guru is doing a lot of work to look at how we do that. So both providers and advisors who want to get involved in that, please let me know. We've got several people from this forum coming onto a session on the 16th of December that's going to talk about business protection for wealth advisors. Anyway, with that, may I now please bring in Lewis Breach from Futureproof. Lewis, would you like to share your passion for 2025? What would you like to see delivered?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So I suppose the first thing to note is that obviously, whether it's mine or any of our kind of wish lists, there's always reasons why things that will cause it to perhaps not be as straightforward as it would hope it be. So I think Phil, it's always worth putting that out there, particularly from an insurer's point of view. They will obviously hear these things and think, yeah, we'd love to do that, but we can't because of this. But hopefully, if there's even just one idea that me or Michael or anyone else shares today, one of them gets taken away and considered at least. So the main thing that I think I'd like to see is just insurers invest more money and time into making positive changes to their systems and their processes, rather than changing or improving products to boost short-term sales. So we see a lot of changes with critical illness contracts, with different things going on with products. And that's really good, because obviously it benefits consumers, it benefits clients because they're protected better. But I feel like the balance is too far on new business, and actually existing clients who have got policies having the ability to, one, receive a really good service when they need it, especially at claim, but also little things throughout. So I'll give you a couple of examples. And one of these examples is exactly the scenario that I came across earlier this year and over the last couple of years when I've had this particular policy. So I've got an income protection policy with a provider who will remain nameless, of course. However, it's got indexation included on it. So 6 weeks before the anniversary date every year, I get a letter and it tells me indexation is going to increase, the things you expect, your monthly benefits going to go up to this, and your premium's going to go up to this. Now, last year, that was, I think, something like a 15% increase in premium and a 10% increase in benefit because of RPI. This year, obviously, it's slightly lower. But on that letter, I get two options. Either accept it, or it's gone forever. You can remove it and it's gone forever. Now, I know with some providers, they allow you to skip it. A lot of providers allow you to skip it. But that's an example where some providers really need to up their game to prevent clients from having a situation where they're left with a choice. The choice is either accept the increase, which, one, you might not want that increase at that time because of the fact it's going up by 15%. But more importantly, I might become overinsured. It's income protection. If my benefit was, you know, 65% of my gross salary at that stage, and then it goes up by 10%, chances are I've probably not had a 10% salary increase. So therefore, I'm now overinsured. So that's option one. Option two is I get rid of the indexation forever, and I'm now underinsured from a year onwards for the remainder of the term, which is like 30 years. So it's not really leaving clients in a position where they're left with a policy that benefits them in the long term, because they then get 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, oh, I need to replace it, it's now more expensive, I now have exclusions. So really the main thing there is allow systems to make changes which mean that clients have a policy and can continue to have a policy that meets their circumstances. And another example of that I come across regularly is, I don't know how many people have gone through a process with a client of changing a policy from Relevant Life and moving it to a personal one. So when people leave a business that they have a Relevant Life policy under, they wind the business down, they can of course transfer that to a personal policy that they pay for themselves. The rigmarole that we go through regularly with a range of insurers is nuts. You know, just to make that, in a client's mind, that should be a simple change. You know they can do it. We tell them, yeah, you can do that. But the amount of paperwork that needs filling in, the amount of hoops you have to jump through, just seems silly. So again, things like that, processes that don't come up that often but relate to things that happen after the policy starting, is where I feel I'd like insurers to make changes and spend more time and money on. And the very final one, three things in total, but it all comes back to the same thing, is I'd love to see more providers actually do, I think Gardner are the only provider that do this at the moment, where you get the cover upgrade on critical illness cover.